I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. Sean, I'm getting texts that those videos of you throwing touchdowns are AI. So don't shoot the message.
Yeah, they're AI because they didn't show enough of them. Okay.
They're AI.
Well, don't limit the touchdown throws. Okay?
You threw zero touchdowns in your career, according to the people that are texting.
10 years, no touchdown, AI. No Grey Cup, no completions, no NFL player of the week, none of it. But
you
hey, who's counting
AI so? Life? That's all.
Hell, if I did, I'd be a billionaire because I just start printing money like the government does and put it wherever I want. So
right, that's how it
that's
works.
That's right, man. How you all doing today, dude?
Good, good. We got a ton to talk about. We got a really
won another bet last night. I mean, under in the Patriots. I mean, but who's counting that money either? I mean, good gracious,
the Jets dude. Had it. I mean, I didn't bet the game. I would never bet with the Jets, but they had it. My pick would have been right. They had it down the 6 yard line or whatever it was towards the end of the game. All they had to do was score. Then they cover their 10 and a half or whatever it was. And
yeah, but if my aunt had balls, as I've told you, she'd be my uncle, well, dude. That's what betting is. If that was the case, hell, I'd have been a billionaire 40 times over if I got the fifth part of before a 5-team parlay.
Yeah, that's true.
So if, close. So that's what it is. If we get close now, we win.
Yes. Yeah, that's how I think it works best. We're going to talk about that game in just a little bit because I got something that I'm done with when it comes to the New York Jets. We're going to talk some gambling. The whole franchise. But one specific thing that I've seen enough of. We're going to talk gambling. We had the Chauncey Billups and Damon Jones and all that stuff happen a few weeks ago. Well, this story continues, and now it's involving college athletics. We've got a huge weekend of football with four really big NFL games, and then we got about three or four really big college football games, and then we'll do our six-pack of picks as we do every single Friday where we pick three NFL and three college games. But, Sean, let's start with the gambling story. We knew in the Chauncey Billups and with the illegal poker games, the telling people who's hurt and that situation, two different cases there. Now we're adding in a third where a member of the Lucchese family, Joseph Little Joe Perna, basically had college athletes all over the country, basically running little books. They run their own little thing. And 14 people arrested now among that involving college athletes. And again, we talked about when we talked about Chauncey and all them, that it was just the tip of the iceberg. Again, this still feels like just the tip of the iceberg. Like they're just giving us little bits every few weeks of what's going on. And we've got the MLB accusations with prop bets and Clase and Ortiz have both been arrested and, you know, processed out and they will face their trial in the coming months. It is just wild how deep this goes, how these families get involved with these athletes. And then once you're involved, you're never not involved again because they keep you under their thumb so well and they know what they're doing. But what's your latest take on 14 people arrested? Now it's involving college kids. Where do you go from here?
This is no shock, and we're not even close to being done because where there's books, meaning these athletes are involved on college campuses, you're going to tell me that the only people they went after were the fraternity guys and sorority and that they didn't talk to their teammates and try to influence them.
Right.
And that every single athlete turned them down at a time when your buddies are getting NIL and you're not. And, you know, what is it? Probably 2% of the guys or 3% of the guys are making 90% of the money. Oh, so yeah. You're telling me that and you're saying, man, I'm getting shortchanged. I know how to make a little NIL money. Let's do this. This is just my opinion. This isn't somebody at some college campus hasn't told me. There's two things to this. First off, from Chauncey Billups to Damon, to all the people involved with this, you couldn't be dumber to get involved with guys with the last name, with the college athletes, with guys whose middle name is Pauly Walnuts or Little Joe, or that has the last name Lucchese or Gambino. You know, first and foremost, that's the time to turn and sprint. And if you don't know, and sadly, some of these NC2A folks, these young college kids, have no idea what the New York Mafia used to be, and apparently it's still involved, and the Vegas Mafia and the Chicago Mafia. Well, they may be a little lower step. The cartel's kind of taken over as the go-to for getting after them, and they're the big dog, right? Mm-hmm. Well, at least one of them. Well, the Mafia, while it may have not be as relevant or as prevalent as it was back when the Lucchese's and the Gambinos and that the groups of the big five or six crime families, the five big ones, Segs, were running the show. And they had nicknames like Little Joe. And Little Joe's probably not 180 pounds. He's probably, as Dr. J reports, Little Joe's probably a biscuit away from 550.
Oh, yeah.
And Eminem away from four bills. But so that's number one. And I know it's kind of a tongue in cheek, but it's true. And how nobody informed them of this. And I don't want to hear professional athletes talk about they were desperate for money. They make enough. Save it. If that's the case, you were chasing money at the wrong time and spending it at the wrong place. I'm not dogging you for going broke because you know what? A lot of people have. A lot of us have been to the point where we've lost it all and had to restart. But not all for gambling when you already have it. Secondly, as I've said before, and I don't know if enough people are listening, the biggest racket slash what's the word I'm looking for? The most addictive, I'm talking about people that are involved and the most blatant gambling and that they know how to run it better than you do is on college campuses. I'm telling you what, the enthusiasts, the gambling enthusiasts,
yeah.
There's more gambling going on college campuses than there is in pro sports. I'm talking about the individuals. You can't imagine. You want to find a bookie? You want to find action? All you got to do is show up on a college campus. And parents, you don't know. You may think you know. You don't. You have no idea. You have no idea. I used to call for Domino's, give my parents for that $20 bill for Domino's pizza sakes. They're calling. I'm not saying all, not a blanket statement. Now kids are calling for, they need $100 to cover their action because they're making a 17 parlay and hoping it hits. Right. This doesn't surprise me one bit. This will not be the last time. If you think that it's 14, wait till you, the 14, put a zero behind that or 2-0. It's coming. Now, whether you catch them all or what have you, but the buck doesn't stop there. But if you're not paying your debts, the buck will stop there because when you're dealing with that type of stuff, it's just the bottom line is, grab a shovel and don't tell anybody where you're going because you're going to end up a place you never thought you'd go. This isn't, like I said a month ago, 3 weeks ago, this isn't losing to your buddy and you owe him a Venmo of $25 or $100 and he's going to tell his buddies and fast pay makes fast friends and you laugh about it and you get a chance to double or nothing on the golf course.
Right.
This is don't pay your debts. You end up places you never get found again. I'm not telling people anything they don't know, but this is no joke. This isn't your buddy's five-year best buddies. And even then, when you go to a buddy, and I'm going to tell you a little story, and this is it had nothing to do with athletes. This is in the last year and a half. When you got a buddy who knows somebody, not with the last name Little Joe, but, you know, all over, you can find a bookie anywhere, right, Sags? Anyplace.
Yeah. Yep.
Who has a buddy, and he – allows him to use that site to throw up about $4,000. Lost it all. Didn't pay back. So who do you think's in trouble? The guy, the buddy that didn't pay it back, or the tweener who collected the money from the people who have the site. Who's in trouble now?
The guy who's in the middle.
So, right.
His account, his
buddy to lose a friendship. And then he's got to, and if that guy doesn't pay, guess what? He ain't going after that guy. He's coming after you, and you got a choice, man.
Yep.
I'm not talking about in a much bigger thing is this. With your buddy and you're doing, it's like, come on, man. Then he's got to go after to his buddy.
Yep.
And he's not going after the guy whose buddy wanted to go on the site, right? It's a couple years ago. And so that's how it goes. In this type of case where the guy's names are Little Joe and Polly Walnuts and Billy Joe No Fingers and all that, you don't get 7 years, and you don't get, oh man, that's 5,000, 15,000, 20,000. The principle of the matter, because if they think they stole from you once, they're going to steal from you another time. So what do they think? The person's the enemy, and they don't care where the money was supposed to come from. They just know it was coming, and they didn't get there. So this is so far from being done, and I hate to tell people this, even if you put NC2A restrictions on it, which there already is, hence, you can't. And if you legalize it, it won't stop on college campuses or college athletes betting or whatever. I don't know how you're going to stop it, because thanks, the snowball is so big right now, and it's already rolling downhill. Like anything, drugs, guns, gambling, they know where to find it more than their parents do.
Yes.
You want a gun? They'll find it. You want drugs? You'll find it. I'm not talking about the legal way. I'm a gun guy, legal way, and gambling. You go to Vegas or have a buddy put it down. You collect from him because he's sitting in a state you can't. Or using futures bets that are legal, you know. But this way, sitting at a table and ripping people off and devising schemes and hiring athletes to go be your book on campus, there's an epidemic on college campuses of gambling. And it ain't going away. I'm just sorry to tell you, it's not.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Professors are smarter than the people that are the government that's running, that's trying to prevent it. Those kids, and they're in that love together until, of course, they got to ask their dad a 15th time for 25 grand because now they're in trouble. And then they go to the high to another level of it because, well, you saw our guy at SC running, you know, the story of the documentary series. Mm-hmm. And once you're in, unless you get out cleanly, you're not getting out unscarred, whether that's mental, emotional, or physical. And we know that.
Yeah, it's a lot of anxious, nervous college athletes right now that know they've done wrong, and they see these arrests, and they know they could be next.
What'd you think was going to happen?
Right.
What'd they think was going to happen?
Eventually.
Now we got brothers and brothers, cousins. We got brothers, cousins, and cousins of cousins, and sons that are involved with those names you just mentioned. This ain't you and I betting on the golf course, Eggs. That's what I mean. Or having a friendly $10 bet over whether SC beats Michigan, right?
Right.
That's not what this is. And it's not stopping here today with this. And it's not stopping with this report. Because now they're digging the hole deeper instead of digging steps on the side to get out. That's the problem.
There's always the people that think they're the ones that can get away with it. So,
oh, yeah, beat the system.
Always see it. Yep.
That's right.
Last night, Pats beat the Jets 27-14. Jets had the chance to score late, maybe make it interesting with an onside kick, but they failed to do so. Pats moved to 9-2, first in the AFC East, playing really good football, have a chance at home field in the playoffs if they could play well down the stretch. But the Jets, now you're 2-8, tied for the second worst record in the NFL. And Sean, the thing I am done with when it comes to the Jets and in the NFL, I'm sorry, Justin Fields is not a quarterback. He is a tremendous athlete. He is a gifted runner. He is fast. He moves with ease. You know, using him as a running quarterback is something that you should be doing.
You can't live there, though, Siggs. You just can't live running quarterback all the time. You
right,
just can't,
exactly.
Unless it's a 3 or 4 play package, you can't live there.
This is 2 weeks in a row where you've looked in the third quarter and Justin Fields has like 40 yards passing. And if you're the Jets, you can't continue. And I know you don't really have that guy you can turn to and be like, okay, let's see what you got. You know, but I'm sorry. I watched Justin Fields for years in Chicago. I'm a Bears fan. I watched every single snap he took in Chicago. I watched a lot of what he took in New York, or in Pittsburgh last year with the Steelers, and now I've watched enough this year. I'm done with the Justin Fields as a quarterback thing. Again, tremendous athlete. If you can find a way to use him, great. He's big. He's 6'3", 225 pounds, moves like a gazelle. You can use him in different ways. Now, if he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't, you know, Tim Tebow didn't want to make that transition to a different position, then I'm sorry, Justin, you're just going to work your way out of the NFL, because teams have to be looking at him, and there can't be a fourth team that says, I can take that guy and make him into a passer. It just can't be said anymore. He's not a passing quarterback in a league that you have to be a passing quarterback to win.
You're spot on, Siggs. And, you know, you said there's not a fourth team, but there will be. And you and I both know it. There will be. Now, it won't be for 15 or 20 million. He's about a season away from playing himself out of the league at quarterback. Now, there's a lot of layers to this. One, well, look at Darnold. Look at Baker Mayfield. Look at Geno Smith. They're all better throwers of the football, yeah, even when they were struggling. When,
10 times when better Fields, throwers of the football.
Right, no doubt. When Fields came out, the knock on him was, progressions, getting through it, and can he be a pocket winning quarterback in the pocket? He's not. Even in college, you know, people that dog Lamar, which was stupid because the guy could throw it in college. Mm-hmm. He just needed more polish. He was a better passer, and look what he's turned into. He beats you from the pocket. He beats outside. He's elevated his game. But in most of our minds, there was never a doubt Lamar Jackson was going to be successful at the position. Right. It's not even just not being able to throw. Justin Fields has not had success, sustained success at the position. When you say, well, you know what, don't quit on him. Well, how long do you go before you not quit on him? And everybody's got an ego to think they can fix somebody. But I'll tell you what it's going to end up doing, getting coaches fired.
Exactly.
How many times can you say Pittsburgh? So we're basically saying that Chicago coach, and you, now there are some that we could argue were bad coaches that didn't coach him right. No question. But so every guy on the offensive staff in Chicago was bad. Everybody at Georgia and Ohio State was bad. Everybody in Pittsburgh is bad, and now everybody with the Jets. Now, there's a lot of bad coaching going on, but you can't tell me that every single guy that coaches or does something doesn't know how to teach football. If that's the case, then what an indictment and a horrible thought process it is for the NFL. That being said, when does the player take accountability? I think he's a spectacular. It's crazy because early this season, I saw some improvement from his throwing, but it's sustained improvement, Segs. There's no doubting his skill set. But if you can't throw it accurately on time and get through your reads and progressions, you will not last at this position. You just won't. So whether it's moving a position or he just wants to be that guy that you got an emergency backup that can play quarterback but not excel at quarterback, there is a big difference. It's like listening and hearing. Segs, I hear what you're saying, right. But I ain't listening to you. He's a great – see, we continue to refer to him as – great athlete, quarterback second. When I talk about Lamar, I talk about Josh, I talk about Mahomes, I talk about Sam Darnold, hell, Drake May. What are we saying now, Sakes? Those guys are quarterbacks first. Warren Moon, quarterback first, athlete second, and he was a great athlete. We are at the point with him, we've never, ever, ever said great quarterback who happens to be a spectacular runner and athlete. Listen, you go in a pair of shorts and T-shirt and play catch on the field and watch him do his thing, you'll walk away from saying that cat's special. Because, yeah. I mean, I'm talking about just with your buddies, right? But all the things that go into quarterbacking, he has not improved consistently at the position. And no quarterback's going to sustain success that's a run first, throw second guy. Throw first, run second guys that are really good, the Lamars, the Josh Allens, those guys can do it because they can beat you with accuracy. They can beat you with arm strength. They're beating you with their mind. And then when all else fails, they're destroying you with their legs as well. He can destroy you with his legs. He can destroy you with his arm strength. And he can also destroy his own team with his arm strength and throwing it in trouble. And his athletic ability, as I say, and I'll be getting this on T-shirts, I need to train. He's a sometimer or a once-in-a-whiler right now. That once in a while, he'll go 22 or 28. You're saying, we saw it earlier this year, like, maybe it's a new level. And then for three straight weeks, it'll be 116 yards passing and 70 yards rushing. He's never going to be a superstar in this league as a quarterback. Seems like a good, to me, seems like a really good kid. And he seems, I mean, he's tried at three different places. I don't want him to quit playing. And if he wants to keep playing quarterback, keep playing quarterback. But if you're committing your franchise to him as a starter, you're not going anywhere. You're just not. And you can't run the ball 47 times a game with your quarterback. He won't last no matter how big and physical he is. You can't tell me that everybody that's ever had their coaching hands on him has been awful at teaching football. There's some guys that just get to a point, they hit their head on a ceiling when it comes to throwing or from the pocket, and he's hit it. He may break through once in a while, but you want your starter to be a once in a while guy or an all the time guy. And so put it this way, Josh or Lamar or Matt Stafford will have a once in a while game where you're like, damn, but 14 of them are really good and two are average or whatever.
Yeah.
It's the other way around here. It's 12 or wow, that's awful. Four, man, he shows potential, flashes of it. And then one or two, you'll say, damn, he looked like a player today. But he's never playing, he's never taking your team to a postseason championship, and he's never going to lead the league in yards, passing, percentage, any of those stats you love, or wins. It's just a fact. Tremendous skill set. Average at best passer.
He has four games this year where he's thrown for 27, 45, 46, and 54. And two of those games, he was the only quarterback that played. So yeah, it wasn't just like Tyrod came in the other two.
Can't keep blaming it on the coach, man. You can't just keep blaming it on the coach. There's got to be – at some point, you just got to look at the player and say, you know what, for instance, if you're a pitcher and can't throw a strike and you got the yips, at some point, if you were a great hitter, then I just got to either move you or you're going to have to go to the bullpen and just throw 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. You can't be a star, whatever it is. At some point, if you want to extend your career, there's going to have to be major changes made, whether it's switching a position or – shifting your paradigms to you're just the backup that comes in because you're the change-up pitch guy. I don't know, because he's not an NFL starting quarterback. He's just not. Right. He is, but he's not. And by the way, those uniforms are fire, the New England Patriots, just to get off it. They were awesome. And I know we'll get to them. The New England Patriots, Sigs, before you get back to it, this is a team with a whole bunch of substance. There's nothing they don't do well enough. And they're not even overloaded with 15 skill set players. I mean, Henderson, they're getting better. You saw Stephon Diggs. This team's real. This is substance, and their quarterback is one of the three or four, at worst, best throwers of the football consistently in this league already. And that's all 32 starters in the league. But back to the Jets, it continues. The Jets must find that guy that's not a veteran coming from somebody else, Russ Wilson, who's not I know he's with the Giants, but I'm using him as an example. A Russ Wilson, just a guy who keeps landing somewhere but isn't a starting quarterback,
right,
or a guy you're drafting that you're drafting on potential without knowing, can he? If you're asking the question, if there's more ifs than there is production, you can't draft the guy in the first round. You just can't. I don't know how or they got to change their evaluators.
Yeah.
Because they miss all the time.
Yeah.
The Jets do. And unfortunately for Justin Fields, this is his third miss on teams. Potential, yes, but potential doesn't equal production.
Yeah, and you saw last night, he actually, I can't remember who it was that threw it to him, but they did like a toss, and then he ran out down the sideline, and they came back and threw it to him, and you saw him kind of make a good play on the ball. Now, it wasn't caught because the DB was right there, but, I mean, you could see he kind of just had that natural wide receiver talent, and you know, if you could turn him into a wide receiver at his size, even you're not going to turn him into a one, but if he can become a weapon and then you can use him in different ways in terms of getting him the ball, letting him throw and having that, I mean, then he's actually something in the NFL. But I get these guys are, you know, it's their pride that sometimes gets in their own way instead of saying, I'm going to figure out how I can be an actual great player in the NFL. It's no, I'm a quarterback. I'm never going to do anything else. Taysom Hill did it. You know, he played quarterback in college, and then he came in and said, you know what, I'm going to figure out a way that I can be on the field a ton.
Well, do you love football or do you love the pub? Right?
Exactly.
Do you love football or do you want to extend your career? Now, if you're bored with it and you say it's either quarterback or bust, then go do something else hope that you keep hanging on and play for 15 teams in 10-year career. Great. That's fine. That doesn't make him a bad guy. And I understand the ego part of it, but I can tell you this. I'll bet he's better at another position. And I'm not saying suggest he moves, 100%. But you have to embrace it and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to go dominate somewhere. Do you think you can count on him to win 4 or 5 games in a row for me throwing the football? It's never going to happen. And if it's never going to happen, there's guys that are played a year that are far better at the position than he is, meaning in the NFL, maybe not as gifted, but being physically gifted doesn't and smart and have a high football IQ, all that doesn't equal being able to throw the football accurately on time and consistently like the great ones in the league. Runners first, throwers seconds don't win consistently in the league. They just don't. If you can't throw first from the pocket on time accurately, you'll hang around if you can extend plays, but you're never going to get where you want to go.
And to think there were dumbass Bears fans that wanted to keep him while having the number one pick and trade it away again like they did the year before and get a haul of assets, which they did when they traded to Carolina and you know, gave Carolina the first pick to take Bryce Young. There was people that wanted them to do it again. Keep Justin Fields, do it again after he struggled that season, and not take Caleb Williams or Drake May or
Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is 10 times better quarterback. I didn't say 10 times better quarterback than Justin Fields already. He already is. And the truth of the matter is, even if Justin Fields was with Ben Johnson, the result wouldn't be the same. It just wouldn't.
Exactly.
It would not be the same.
Ben Johnson
wouldn't
have taken the job with Justin Fields there. That's the
if he did, Justin Fields would have been traded while Ben Johnson was there. He would not be Ben Johnson's starting quarterback.
Correct. Right. Correct. Looking at some big games this weekend. First one, Tampa Bay at Buffalo. What does Josh Allen and company need to do against this Bucs defense to kind of, we haven't seen the big explosion from the Buffalo offense enough this season that I think's kind of held them back, kept them in some games they should probably won by 2 scores or more. What do they need to get going in terms of Josh Allen and the passing game and everything like that?
Segs, they got to be a three-dimensional team. I'm talking about on the offensive side of the ball. And you say, Sean, how do you have three dimensions? Well, I use the quarterback's feet as the third dimension for them.
Gotcha.
Right now, as good as Cook is in Buffalo when he's running it, if he runs it great and Buffalo's quarterback position plays average, Tampa Bay will beat them in their building. If Josh is throwing it well, but they're getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage, Superman may rear his head, but Tampa will win that game. If Buffalo has Josh's feet, Josh's arm, and they're running the football well and dominating the offensive line of scrimmage, even if their defense gives up 24 to the Buccaneers, the Buffalo Bills will win that game. For them, at some point in time, you got to prove to the world, and more importantly to yourselves, that Josh Allen does not have to fly around in a blue and red suit, which happens to be their colors, with an S on his chest, to win at home. You shouldn't have to do that at home to win a game. Now, Tampa's been a little erratic at times offensively, right? Segs up and with injuries and the rest of it. For them, it's going to have to be, you're going to have to play in the backfield. Now, I'm talking about in the run and passing game, because something tells me after what happened last week, you're going to get a different Buffalo Bills team this week. And in my opinion, Tampa may have to play their best game to win. I like Buffalo in the game, but you know my affinity for Tampa and Baker Mayfield. And I will tell you this, if it's the fourth quarter and it's within a field goal or a touchdown and Tampa has the ball last, they won't get the same result they got last week when they screwed up with penalties and couldn't get fourth down. It will be a different result. Buffalo needs to extend that lead and keep Baker Mayfield away from the damn football. I need three dimensions on offense. I do like Buffalo in the game. Had they beat Miami last week going home, maybe. Both are coming off a loss, but I would expect Tampa to be better this week, but I would expect you to see a complete game from Buffalo. You give me the Bills in this one.
Looking at the Seahawks and Rams, really good matchup.
I think it's one of the games of the year. I do. I think it's one of the best games of the year.
Agreed. Agreed. Both teams 7-2 in the division, both playing for first seed in the NFC as we go through these last, you know, half of the season. Which team needs home field more when you look at these two to win the division, get that home field in either LA or Seattle. Who needs it more when you look at these two teams?
Seattle. I think if you're the Rams, I think the Rams can roll into Wembley Stadium. I think they can go play in the parking lot. I think they can go to Philly. I think they can go to Buffalo if they were playing, if the Super Bowl was there and Buffalo was home. You know, I'm just using obviously hyperbole stuff. I think the Rams travel as well as anybody. I don't think Stafford cares. He can throw it in bad weather, good weather. They'll run it. They're committed. Again, their front gets after you. To me, the Rams will travel better. While I love what the Seahawks are doing, I just trust where the Rams have been more than the Seahawks. And now here's something that I'm hoping is out of his mind on the other side for Sam Darnold. In Minnesota last year, he picked the two worst games to have his two worst games against Detroit for the division. And in the first playoff game. And it's not just on Sam, but we always say, well, what happened to the quarterback?
Right.
Had he put it this way, they beat Detroit and he extends them and they win the playoffs and they go and win another game. Sam Darnold's your starting quarterback in Minnesota still.
Yes.
I wholeheartedly believe that. But it went on and he's been fantastic. Hell, if it's not for the way Stafford, Drake Mayer played, you could say Sam Darnold's having as good as any season. And what he's done to uplift Seattle's offense, and they're physical in the run game. I think this is a freaking great game. I think here's the difference, Sage. If you can get Sam Darnold in L.A. to hold – and now, don't discount, Sam played some of the best football in the world, what he played there at the Coliseum right there in L.A. So he'll welcome and enjoy this. If you can get to him, because the one thing Sam still has in him but not as bad, and he's been so great at protecting the football, he trusts his arm as much as Stafford trusts his. And if you get to him and you're down a little bit, maybe the Hawks are down 10, but still in the game, if you can force him to try to throw a ball into a window he probably shouldn't. I love his guts, but he's got – that's the reason for his uprising, Segs. His guts are still there, but he's done a great job of, I'll get that one later, check it down. Oh, that's there, and let it rip. He's taken hesitation out of his game. But if you can play in the backfield and hit him a few times and maybe get up, he may try to take a shot that can be the difference in the game. Now, if he takes a shot and you're late getting out of your back pedal as a defensive back, Darnold will destroy you because that ball comes out in a hurry. I like the Rams in this game, Segs. I do. I think the Rams are playing Super Bowl football, and of all the teams, Patriots included, I don't know how we don't think this team's as good as any. Win or loss column, be damned. The Rams are really friggin' good. The Seahawks would need home field advantage more than the Rams, I think, to get to February.
Yeah, and when you talk about the home field advantage, it's in L.A., it's kind of like the Rams are playing an away game half the time. They're
no doubt.
It's not like their fans are going there and they're loud and crazy and, you know, they've got every seat filled with the Rams. Half the time, it's half the other fan base that loves to travel to L.A., go
and
see
it's kind
a
of a corporate event. It's Los Angeles. There's 10 million things to do. You're right.
Right. Whereas in Seattle, it's the 12th man. They're going crazy. It's outside. So you got to deal with the elements a lot of times in January. So that's where Seattle, I think, you know, get the win. And if they can secure home field, it's huge when it comes.
Oh, dude, I played there Seattle as a rookie, Seahawks. Not in that building, Saints, but the Kingdom was loud as hell. It was like those fans. I'm telling you what you don't want to do. When the Legion of Boom and Pete was there, you don't want to go there and play.
Right.
I'm just telling you, you don't. And the way they're playing now, it's not deep. They'll score with you. You want to get into a shootout, Darnold will throw you into a shootout. But the difference in this game may very well be how you handle maybe, and it may not be a steady diet of hitting the quarterback in the mouth on either side. I'm just anxious to see if the Rams jump up, how many shots will Sam take to try and throw them back in and get impatient. Oh, boy, do I love his game.
Another monster divisional game. Kansas City going to Denver. Denver's a win for Denver puts them 3.5 games ahead of Kansas City in the division. And, you know, you still have the Chargers in there as well when you're talking about the division. Pulling it up right now, you've got the Chargers sitting at 7-3. The Broncos at 8-2 and the Chiefs at 5-4. Is this a must-win game for the Kansas City Chiefs?
I don't think it's a must. You know how I feel. Hell, I go into thinking you got must. I know they try to win them all. I'm must-win, no. because I know who the team is, and I know at this time of year, when we go middle of November to late December to December, they're more than capable of winning six in a row. And how many wins do you think gets a team in the playoffs in the AFC? 10?
Yeah, probably.
And what are they sitting at right now?
5.
So they lose, and that means there's what? That'll be 11. So you got what, 6 games to go?
Yeah.
Is there any doubt in your mind they can win 5 out of 6? No, we believe they can. I'm not even looking at the schedule. But put it this way, at this stage of the season, over the last handful of years, this is as important a game as they play to get themselves back into it, no doubt. Meaning important a win so you're not in a complete chase, because you don't want the pressure sakes. Like I always say, win them early. You don't have to chase in December, right? Right. They'll be in a chase. And maybe that's what's best for them, because when we all left them for dead, they got healthy and started playing really good football. I actually expect them to win the football game. I do. I think they are going to win the football game. But I can tell you this, and because when all gets down to it, as much as I love some Bo Nix, give me Mahomes in nut cutting time, even though Denver knows how to take care of their business. And I'm the best matchup in this game has zero to do with the quarterback position. It has everything to do with what offensive line is going to give their guy a chance and move the pile. Because one thing I know this, and you could expect Andy to run a bunch of screens, Andy Reid, and get the ball out quickly, because they will feast on this. And I'm telling you, they're not going to back off on it. You let Mahomes sit back there and hold the ball, and those speedy receivers get into space, forget it. Advantage in that case, even though I love Spags, and he'll have something for Bo Nix, Spagnuolo will, advantage Denver, because they are getting after. So as close to a must win without it being, if you lose, you're eliminated for the Chiefs, at least their psyche, Segs. But you're not going to tell your team, if we lose, we're out of it. But mentally, I think they go into this approach. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I actually think it's going to be low scoring, even with the Mahomes at Kansas City. This is like 20-17 for me. But give me Kansas City in a close one. Because I right now, as much as I love Bo Nix, and I like his guts and his balls, but not literally his balls, but that he's ballsy. But Mahomes in these games usually finds a way to win.
Yeah, and looking at the playoffs, where Kansas City stands now, I think they still feel comfortable, even with a loss, because right now they're battling. It feels like the top six are kind of in. You got the Patriots, you got the Colts, you got the Broncos, you got the winner of the AFC North. So I think, you know, we all expect Baltimore to kind of jump the Steelers and take that division by the end of the year. With
they're better than all the other teams right now. Yeah,
yes, no doubt. Lamar is playing this week, so after sitting out a couple practices. Then you've got the Chargers, you've got Buffalo. So then it's that seventh playoff spot, and it really looks like it's going to come down to the Chiefs, the Jags, the Texans, and most likely the Steelers. And which team do you trust out of those four right now? I think it has to be clear in a way the Kansas City Chiefs.
Do you trust the Steelers? I don't. No, they don't have any weapons. Do you trust the Texans offensively? No. Hell no. They got away with one last week, but damn. And then you don't trust the Jaguars because you saw what you saw last week. And you don't trust their quarterback. So listen, if you're putting that futures bet on these four or who's going to get to the playoffs, I think you know that answer.
Yeah.
And I think you do now. We look at tougher divisions and the rest of it, but even in divisions that aren't very tough, the New Orleans Saints can go beat the Carolina Panthers, right, with a rookie quarterback starting when Carolina started to get better. So, I mean, it's all over the place. But, yeah, of those four teams you named, I trust the Texans defense. I don't trust the Jags overall at all. And I don't trust the Steelers right now offensively or consistently on defense. I just don't. Kansas City, I trust on both sides of the ball, even though it's been kind of a sluggish season for them at times. They still look more like the Chiefs that know how to get to the playoffs. Give me them.
Yeah. Then last but not least, we got Sunday Night Football. The Detroit Lions, they're 6-3, tied atop the division with the Bears. They go to Philly to take on the 7-2 Eagles, who, as we talked about yesterday, A.J. Brown, not happy, says the offense isn't clicking. Things aren't going well for this offense, yet they find themselves 7-2 atop the division in the NFC East. 7-2, just like Seattle and the Rams trying to get that top seed again to make teams come to Philly, who do have a home field advantage when they're in their stadium there in Philadelphia. So what do you like about this game? And do you think the Philly defense can slow down the Detroit offense?
Dan Campbell calling plays. I think the run game for Detroit is going to be monster this week. I do. And I'm talking about like third and six, you run a draw or you get a, that you don't shit can the run game on the road because it's third and six. You know, Philly knows how to win, dude. They just do. But I tell you what, Detroit's defense will fly around. I actually think Detroit can go in there and win this. I rarely would pick against Philadelphia at home when they're who they are. But and at times, Segs, teams rally around when guys, you know, one guy's mad and they're fighting and the offense isn't good and you expect it. But I think Detroit's defense can give their passing game some trouble. And when are you going to say that you would pick Detroit's run game over Philadelphia's run game? Two of the best in the league last year. But, you know, you say, well, Saquon Barkley. But in truth, with Montgomery and Gibbs, they're not taking a backseat to Philly's run game.
Right. So no, not at all.
I'm anxious to see Philly's energy offensively and Detroit's ability to make sure that Barkley doesn't have a breakout game and see if in a throwing match, you're going to favor Goff.
Yeah.
You just are. And you just are, even though Jalen knows how to win. So I'm kind of seeing it. I'm looking forward to seeing what Philly is. But I'm going to tell you what even sticks out more to me in this sakes. And I know people say, oh, it's too early to be thinking the emotional and mental impact of a game. I think it's extremely important for Detroit to prove to themselves, again, that they can go on the road, a night game in a hostile environment, because there's a chance these two will see each other again, or they'll be on the road somewhere. It doesn't even matter. I'm not even talking about the weather. I'm just talking about the psyche of when I say Detroit indoors, you know what everybody says? They got to win there or they're not winning. That's right, I'm talking about through the playoffs. Well, we know that they can go on the road and throw it. And I don't even know what their record is on the road this year. I didn't even look. But it hit me and I thought, well, are there certain games that psychologically a win, winning in a certain way in some place? I'm not even so sure that Detroit wouldn't love to win this game 17-10 in a slugfest fistfight so they could prove we're just not pretty on the edges, dude. We can, and we know their offensive line's good, but we could beat you that way too if you want to get into one of those body blow games.
Right.
I think psychologically this is important. They may not tell you. They'll say they don't care where they go, like all teams do. But I know, having been in a cold city, but playing indoors and then going on the road, that not even the cold, the impact of going into somebody's building when you're an indoor and what everybody's saying about you, to dispel that and beat them away that you didn't score 35.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 years ago, if you didn't score 35 as the Detroit Lion, or 3 years ago, you weren't winning. But now, can you get into I can't hit him in the face, man. This is a defensive fist fight. And if they go on the road and win one of those in a very difficult place in Philly where the fans are going to be passionate, I think it would be psychologically a huge win for Detroit moving forward. They switch, you know, different play caller, all that. This is, to me, a gut check for the Detroit Lions. Philly will be fine either way, even if it looks ugly. They know how to win ugly. Yep. The question is, can Detroit win ugly on the road against one of the better teams in the NFC? This is a huge one.
Yeah, and I think something else to watch is, can Detroit keep A.J. Brown down early? Because you feel like he's getting to that
point. Getting mad on the sidelines.
Yep. You're jawing at him being like, oh, look, you ain't getting the ball again. Here we go. You know, I dropped you on my fantasy team. All of those kind of comments coming from the corners and the linebackers and everybody like, oh, you're going to quit. You're going to quit. You know, and that can really put a damper on that game for the Philly offense if they can't get going early.
And can Detroit win a game when it just doesn't feel right to them? Meaning,
right.
And when they're up 31-10, Segs, they're just rolling. You know, can Goff throw two picks and lay one on the ground? It's been a sluggish first half, and you get your ass chewed at halftime. You're not playing well. And then the dog peed on your leg before you left to come to the stadium, and your teammates aren't looking at you because, well, you screwed up and threw a pick that was wide open, and they took it the other way, and then find a way to win. You know, I guess, like, to me, I don't know. I always – there's a lot of times I judge teams on the – on the win column in when they didn't play well. Mm-hmm. That's it's like a pitcher. I watch a guy grind out a win, and he scattered 9 hits, gave up a couple solo home runs early, and still gets you 7 2/3 and wins after 105, 110 pitches.
Right.
And he did it out, and it wasn't his best, but in the long run, it may have proved to be the gut check that was his best.
Yes.
And I think that's the same with the Detroit Lions. Regardless of what anybody else says, I still think they have that to prove to themselves.
Yeah, there's other good NFL games this weekend. Let's switch over to college. Let's start with the game of the weekend. That's Georgia, Texas. Texas traveling to Athens, number 10 Texas, taking on number 5 Georgia. You mentioned it yesterday. Both these teams playing really good football, the best football they've played all year long. Arch is coming along, but he hasn't seen a defense like Georgia lately. You get and Gunnar Stockton. We kind of been talking about him. Like, is he a guy that you kind of trust? Well, damn, all of a sudden he started playing his ass off over these last couple weeks. So looking at this game, who do you like more? And is it just the fact that Georgia's at home? You think they can slow Texas down? Or is this Georgia offense good enough to beat this really good Texas defense? There's so many layers to each side that it's going to be fascinating to watch on Saturday.
I would pick Georgia no matter where they're playing.
Okay.
Even though I love the way Texas has started playing, I know they're physical. They've proven it. The Texas run game has to be real this week, Sags. It just does. It has to. As much as I love the way Arch is going, I think it's going to be his performance is going to be based on because there's so many other things you can do. Right now, I'm still not ready to go into a game when he's got to carry me on the road against a really, really good team and make every single throw without help, meaning without the run, one-dimensional team. And while I love his progress, here's what's telling me, Sags. My heart wants to pick Texas. You know, I'm a Sark guy, and, you know, just on the affinity for the Manning family and almost where it's like a middle finger for Arch that he's just still grinding and he's come through some shit, and he really has waded through some shit and self-inflicted with some throws and some of the things he was not doing well. Right. And it almost feels like he's almost to the point, Sags, where he gets to the other side of the mountain. He starts to see it clearly. But I still think the climb is there because I think he needs another signature big one like this to say, now, if they go in and they beat Georgia, be careful the rest of the college football. I'm just telling you, because they're physical enough, they got enough running talent to dominate the line of scrimmage. And they're going to get after you on defense. They'll hit you in the mouth. But Stockton's a really good player. Georgia looks like Georgia's defense. And Kirby is a phenomenal coach, as is Sarkisian. I just think the overall physicality, and while both are physical, I'd pick Georgia on the road, no matter where they played. I just think that at home between the hedges would be a little much. I don't think it's a blowout. But here's one thing that I'm going to tell Georgia. If you dick around like you did against Tennessee and like you've done a couple times this year and came away with wins, you are going to get beat in your building. So if they both play their best, give me Georgia.
Yep.
But if Georgia thinks it's going to be one, hey, we'll just kind of hang around and make this a late run. No, they need the physicality they had a couple years ago when they went after Quinn Ewers, like I said, yesterday, when they hit him from the opening snap. If you let Arch get rolling and he's 10 of 12 and their running game's going, you may change your bet at halftime on a little live bet going on, Sigs. That's But for me, I still think Georgia's the better team. I don't care where they're ranked. I think Georgia's the better team. Both look like they're starting to pass the eye test, and neither the first 3 weeks of the season or so was passing the eye test of Georgia and Texas. They weren't national championship teams, right, let alone we were starting to wonder, are they playoff teams? And we even talked about it on this show. Both now are, and more than likely both will be. I like Georgia in the football game because my gut and head tell me Georgia. My heart tells me Texas. But my gut in this one, I'm going with the gut, meaning the physical toughness of the gut. And I just think Georgia's primed for a run. And I think when all is said and done, Georgia may be standing longer than Texas when we get to the postseason.
Yeah, Texas, they lose, they're out of the playoff. They win, they still have to beat Texas A&M in the last week of the regular season to keep their
playoff. Which is no easy task because Texas A&M has passed the eye test the whole year.
Exactly.
One real thing about that, and you make such a great point, and I'm glad you said it. Need to win. There's two types of teams when you need to win. There's the one that can't handle the need to win and pressure, and there's the one that can. We're going to find out who Texas is, right? We just are. And I'm not saying that either way that, oh, if they lose, that means they couldn't handle it. I'm talking about it just it's a one game. And Texas absolutely has to treat this as if it's single elimination. Yet you don't want to play that uptight. Does that make sense? That's the fine line, man. How do you get it across? Relax and go play and let it rip. But if we lose, we'll play it in some other bowl game and we ain't getting this. That's where they're at. So must win. You talk about must wins. This is it for Texas. They're not getting in if they lose this game.
I mean, if you're Georgia, if you happen to lose this game, you still have to face Georgia Tech in your last week of the regular season. Now, if you win this game, now you're feeling good. Like, yeah, even if we go slip up against Georgia Tech.
Well, then they can play free against Georgia Tech. Yes, they'll exactly. be in the same position Texas is in this week.
Right now.
Next week, or when they play Georgia Tech, right? If they lose this football game.
Yes. So it'll be fascinating to watch. Another team that must win to stay in is number 11, Oklahoma. They travel to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama, who has been playing good football. OU's that offense is not where it's been since the beginning of the season when they beat Michigan with Mateer going nuts. He got hurt, and it just never quite got back to that level yet. Can they get it there against Alabama in Tuscaloosa, or is Alabama just playing too well right now? You just trust them too much, and they're going to take care of Oklahoma and knock them out of the college football playoff picture.
I'm not sure Alabama's not winning the whole damn thing, dude. I'm telling you. You said they're not there yet. They're not going to get there this week either offensively. Put it this way. If you're OU, and I know Mateer's tough, and I know they love this situation, and I'm sure they relish this opportunity to go in there and win. And it'll be I think it'll be a good game for a little while. I think in the end, Alabama's going to win it at home. I don't think that OU's where they want to be offensively, and I don't think they'll get there in this game. Although a full hell, if Mateer never would have got hurt, we may be having a completely different conversation about where Oklahoma is and how we feel about them. They're still working it back. If I was Oklahoma, I'd like to get right with some other opponent offensively. Thanks. And you never know. I know Mateer's got the stones of a balls of a daytime burglar, as I've talked about. He'll walk right into your house during the middle of the day and snatch it while you're in the backyard watering it and leave again, even with alarm on. I get it. But the problem is there's a deadbolt on that one. Alabama's winning this game at home. There will not be enough offense for OU to beat Alabama. Alabama will do enough. And their quarterback continues to throw the ball to the right person without it hitting the ground.
Another team fighting for their playoff lives, your USC Trojans. They welcome the Iowa Hawkeyes, who have a very, very good defense. But we've seen USC's offense play at such a high level. Do you give the Hawkeyes any bit of a chance here in this game when we're, you know, talking USC? We said they got to beat Iowa, they got to beat Oregon, and they got to beat UCLA to have a chance to get into the college football playoff. So they're playing just like Texas. We can't lose any of these games. We got to win out to get our ticket to the college football playoff.
I'm usually harsher on my alma mater than I am on any other team. And I'm not spraying compliments all over the place. Just maybe that's just because they are my school, and I still am waiting for another level. I think they're going to curb stomp Iowa. Now, I don't know if that's a look. 24-6.
Yeah.
To me, that's a good. I don't think Iowa's going to scare anybody with explosive offense. No. How Iowa will win the game? SC gets careless with two or three turnovers, and two of them are on the short field, and that's all Iowa's got to do is go 35 yards.
Right.
No problem. I can actually see a turnover in the short field, and Iowa have to kick a field goal, and USC wins 28-9. I can see it. I rarely tell you SC's going to go beat somebody up. I don't think Iowa coming into SC, the team speed, Iowa's off. If the score's in the teens, Iowa probably win the game, Segs. But I don't think even as good as Iowa's defense can be, and they're going to try to shorten the game and control it and limit possessions, even though Iowa's defense is good, SC's offense is better than Iowa's defense, and SC's defense is better than Iowa's offense. I don't think this one's close. I don't. I think SC, I don't. I think it's a comfortable win in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Trojans keep their college football playoff hopes alive this week, and then we'll see against Oregon. Switching over to our last thing, six-pack of picks, as we do every single week, and we'll see. You've picked a couple of these games, but now let's see if the numbers change where maybe you lean the other way, but you still like that team to win. Yes. Yep. Let's start in the NFL. We got Tampa Bay at Buffalo, where you like Buffalo here, but does Buffalo -6.5 change your pick when it comes to picking against the spread. And then the over under sits at 47.5. So we can pick either side. We can pick both if we want. But give me at least one pick.
My pick, if I'm betting, and I don't, at this stage of the week, I'm not real sure yet on a Sunday what games I'm betting. But for the sake of the show and our segment every week, Sigs, 6.5, I think Tampa's good enough to stay inside there. And Baker Mayfield, like I said, even if it's a backdoor, they're down 13. I trust them to go down and get a score to at least force an onside kick. So points-wise, if you're giving me 6.5 points, I'm taking Tampa Bay on the road.
Yeah, I have written down Tampa Bay as well. I think they're good enough to stay inside. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Buffalo win the game.
27-21, maybe say. It could be.
Yeah.
I just think that hook, there's a reason why that's on there. I would take Tampa.
I do like, even with the score you just said, that's the under. I do like the under in this game. A lot of offense. Buffalo's offense hasn't been quite what it usually is. And Tampa's still missing Chris Godwin, still missing Bucky Irving. So I would take the under in this game. I think it'll be a close game, maybe 23-20 Buffalo, something along those lines. Seattle at the Rams. Rams minus 3.5 with a 48.5 point over under.
Give me the over in the game.
Okay.
I'm taking the over. I think both quarterbacks are too good. I think this reeks of 31-28, 27-24. I do. I just think both quarterbacks are playing at such a high level that it take the over. The hook for – if I was going to pick it, say, you said it's 3.5, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's part of me that thinks this is a field goal game for the Rams. And would, but I actually feel more comfortable with the points. I think the Rams are going to win the game, but I think at halftime it's 21-17 type game. I think I'm going the over. Quarterback play is too good for both of those. And there's rare we run into two teams we're saying, oh, the quarterback play, even though they're big names, is too good. I think the quarterback play in both of these, and you may even see both these quarterbacks with the guts they got, the arm trust, throw a pick six and still overcome it and win a game.
Yeah.
There may be a defensive touchdown in this game. I like the over in this one.
Right now, sitting at minus 3.5, I do like the Rams just enough to give up the points and say that I think they're the better team. Seattle on the road. Yeah, not a true road game in LA, but I think on the road, I'll take the Rams minus the 3.5. All right, Sunday Night Football. Detroit at Philly. Philly minus 2.5. With the over-under sitting at 46.5.
Under, I'm picking both. Under, Detroit wins outright.
Ooh, okay. Detroit outright. I'm staying away from the over-under.
I would not bet it with my own money. Oh,
yeah.
I'm just concerned about stops and going and shortening the game with the run game and inbounds. Now, we know Detroit's capable of hanging 40 on anybody.
They ain't
going to hang 40 on Philly this week. That ain't happening.
I'm going Philly minus the 2.5. I think they're going to make a concerted effort to really get A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith the ball this week. And then I think Saquon can use his speed to the outside against this Detroit defense that's good up the middle. But and the other thing I like about Philly is, against Detroit likes to get after the passer. Jalen Hurts is so good at moving and still getting the ball down the field, or the screen game to Barkley, that kind of stuff. I'm taking Philly, and I think I just kind of hope that they lose and the Bears win and they're in first place in the division.
Right. My biggest concern for Detroit is that very thing, and it's the two of them. If you're going to blitz or get after Jalen Hurts, don't miss. This is a big, strong dude. You better bring him to the ground, because he'll extend series and plays and give you three more, which means three less plays, four less plays, a series less plays for Detroit, because Detroit likes to play and get their 65, 70 play. They want to get all those plays in, because they can score from the parking lot in the locker room. And even if Barkley doesn't run inside, I am concerned about him in the option game and in space catching the football. Yeah. So if you blitz and you run a hot read and get him in space with a linebacker or a safety, and you got to tackle him, advantage Philly. But on the other side too, there's nobody in the league that gets to the edge quicker than Gibbs. So you, you're going to have to. And if you let Goff sit back there and hold the football and don't rush the passer, he's going to give you all you can handle as well. I'm just going on this. I like Detroit, like I said, with the money. I'm taking Detroit straight up in this game. Although we come out of this on Monday, Segs, and you say, man, Philly got him. It was 21-17. It will not shock me because Philly always finds ways to win. But I think we're going to see a little bit of different moxie from Detroit in this one on the road.
Whoever's offensive line holds up the best, I think, wins this game. And you can say that about a lot of
the top five off, two of the top three or four offensive lines in the league. Yep.
And we're going to see the Eagles got Jalen Phillips at the trade deadline. He made a big impact in game.
Boy, was he good last week?
Six pressures, a couple sacks. Like, he got after the quarterback. So him, Jalen Carter, and the rest of that, Jordan Davis, the rest of that unit up front for Philly, I think can cause some havoc. But Detroit's offensive line is really, really damn
well.
Good.
Just like if you get Barkley getting space, I'm going to tell you what, if Gibbs and Montgomery are in space, you got some problems, brother.
Yes.
If they're out there running, because Gibbs, I mean, I don't know, is there a faster guy to the edge in the league than that cat? And if he's in space, you're going to have some trouble. So it's going to be a fun Monday night football game to watch. That's Monday or Sunday? So I guess
Sunday night.
Okay, there you go. That's right, because we'll put the Monday game up there until really talk about it till Monday morning. So yeah, that's a Sunday nighter that we're going to really enjoy, I think.
Yeah, if you see there, Monday is Dallas and your Las Vegas Raiders, which is
what a thriller that'll be.
Yeah. Switching over to Texas, fly through these last three games. Texas at Georgia. You like Georgia in the game, but it's Georgia minus 6.5 with a 50.5 over under.
Give me the under in the game.
Okay. I like that. I have the under as well. But I am taking Georgia minus the points. I think
Georgia is going to win by 10 points a touchdown and a field goal. I just do.
I think, 24-14, 27-14 type game. I feel like for Georgia,
I'm more comfortable with the under though in this game. That's just me. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I like the under as well. OU at Bama. Bama minus 5.5, 46.5
is the over. Bama. I'll give the points away. I think it's a touchdown game for them, and I think they win at home.
Yep, I have Bama written down as well. And then the last game we didn't talk about in our college games, but it's a big one because they're also playing for their playoff lives. That's Notre Dame traveling to a dangerous Pittsburgh team, ranked 22nd in the college football playoff rankings. This is Notre Dame minus 12.5 with the over-under set at 53.5.
I'd take the under and Pitt in this. I think Pitt are they like a good brawl. I think Pitt's going to hang in there. Notre Dame will end up winning the game, I think, if we're just choosing straight up. But
yeah,
I like the under, little physicality, and I like Pitt. I think it may be a 10-point game, but I think that's a lot of points for a team that still has playoff hopes alive. If you're Pitt, they still do. I mean, they think they do, and Notre Dame obviously needs this as well. But that's a lot of points for two teams that are top 25 teams.
Yeah,
the game's on the road, isn't it? Isn't it in Pitt?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a hard one, man. Yeah, I would take Pitt. Pitt would be my choice in this.
Yeah, I'm taking Pittsburgh as well. I think Narduzzi and company. I think they have a chance to beat them, not only just be inside the number, but they have a chance to beat them and knock Notre Dame out of the college football playoff, in my opinion, with their third loss of the season. I think this is a dangerous game for the Fighting Irish.
Fans that are looking at the betting line, if you haven't seen Pitt play, I would not get real comfortable.
Yes.
I mean, take a look, go back, watch a few highlights or something, because it seems awful high, which makes me a little nervous because where the line is, Segs. Mm-hmm. You're a 12.5 point favorite on the road, and the team's a top 25 team.
Yes.
I don't think Narduzzi is going to he's going to chew on his team to get them ready to play. Mm-hmm. They're going to be physical enough. Notre Dame will win in the end, I think, but I give Pitt a chance as well. That just seems like way too many points, Segs. I like Pitt in the football game.
I agree. All right, well, that'll do it for our six-pack of picks. That'll do it for us today. We'll see if any more gambling news comes out, any more arrests made, maybe some college athletes named, see who's been doing this, what colleges it is. But, again, it can be anywhere, and it can be any school. It can be small schools. There's a lot of schools out there that gambling, like you said, is very, very prevalent.
Segs, also next week we'll talk, because I'm anxious to see where he ends up. Under Armour's company is in a little flux, is a rough situation right now. And Steph Curry, after all that, and his own shoe, and his shoe, I believe, is traveling with him.
Yes.
His brand. Under Armour and him parted ways. At this stage of his career, I'm curious, at this stage of his career, if a Nike or an Adidas or somebody else jumps in and offers him, you know, I think he's got equity in Reebok as well. And I'm assuming that stays. I mean, the equity stays. It's your equity. I mean, I mm-hmm. would imagine the contract. It doesn't matter where he goes. He still has equity in Under Armour. So I'm curious to think how big this deal will be, or is his biggest shoe deal past him yet at this stage of his career? Yet he's still so friggin' good. Hell, if I'm the next one, I ask him to put a golf line too. The guy loves golf so damn much. Yeah. You can double capitalize, have him put a golf shoe out there or whatever it is, because he's just a phenomenal athlete. And by the way, speaking of athletes, we talk about the greatest athletes in the world. You know who may be as good an athlete as there is in the world right now? Is Mookie Betts, dude. The guy can dunk basketballs. The guy like bowls 300. And if you've never seen his golf swing, check it out. The tempo, it's like, dude, everything Mookie Betts does, he's great at.
Yeah.
So it just hit me when we were talking about, you know, these athletes and Steph Curry and his shoe deal, that Mookie Betts just, you know, you watch with it. It's like, put it this way. When you watch him play, if you don't know what sport he plays, you're thinking, oh, man, this must be his offseason. He plays point guard in the NBA. Yeah. Or when he goes up and dunks, oh, man, a golfer. Man, I wonder where's he at on the money list? He's just so smooth with his tempo. But he's a fun watch, too. I love seeing these great athletes that can do it all. I'm curious what kind of big money Steph Curry is going to get with this shoe deal.
Real quick to end the show, Scooble Skeens or Cy Youngs, Ohtani unanimous MVP, Aaron Judge slightly. He had 17 first-place votes, 13 second-place. Cal Raleigh had 13 first-place votes, 17 second-place votes. Aaron Judge is your AL MVP. Did they get it right?
Skeens and Scooble, no-brainer. Yes, they got that right, in my opinion, Segs. I don't know if you feel the same
100%.
Way.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. The Ohtani thing, no-brainer, for sure. I know Schwarber, but, I mean, with Ohtani doing both, the Schwarber thing. Who finished second? Did Schwarber finish second or third? I didn't even see that.
Honestly, I didn't even look at the NL.
I didn't even look at the results. I just looked at the winners.
I just
The Judge Raleigh thing, it's arguable.
Yeah.
The batting average for Judge, right? Home runs, RBIs, they both got theirs. Batting average, Judge, but Cal Raleigh defensively. So I don't know if they gave him that extra lift, because then they'll just give him a gold or a platinum glove because the pass balls don't happen. He's great there.
Right.
I'm not arguing either one of those when it comes to the MVP in the American League, because Judge played great baseball and a triple crown candidate a lot of the year. And on the other side, Cal Raleigh was phenomenal. I kind of would have liked to see Raleigh, because he unprecedented doing what he did at a catcher position. I don't know if he can repeat that again, those numbers. Judge can. It's just such a wear and tear on Raleigh. I had a little bit of favoritism toward Raleigh. And one thing I love about all four of these candidates, all great dudes.
Yeah.
No, not big self-promoters. All of them respect the game and went about their business. I can't say Judge didn't deserve it, and I can't say that Raleigh didn't either, but he finished second. If you're going to lose it having that kind of season to a guy, normally Raleigh would have been a unanimous win for Raleigh. It would have. He just ran into a guy that plays in New York who's a great dude, but also a phenomenal baseball player.
Yeah, it was an incredible season by Cal Raleigh, and you just wish he could get that MVP, because
no
Judge
question.
It's going to be hard to repeat
those numbers as a catcher. Yeah, things. It just is.
It's tough to see. Yep, he is.
I see that name up there, Ramirez. Yeah. How about that guy, dude? If you say what guy over his 20-year career, when it's all said and done, finished in the MVP voting 17 times?
Yeah.
The most consistent, unheralded player in baseball, and it's not close, is Jose Ramirez. Period. Yes.
Completely agree. All right, make sure you please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Follow us on Twitter at Sean Unfiltered, at Adam G. Sager, at Unpaved on Rumble. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey. Thanks to all of our listeners and viewers. Enjoy the football weekend, Sean. We got a lot of games to cover on Monday.
And
we'll have JB join us on Monday.
join us on Monday. You know, he'll be passionate, and I'm excited. I would go hit some balls around and, you know, get on a range and go play a little bit and get ready for the weekend, man. I can't wait.
It's like 38 degrees here. There is no driving range right now.
80s for us today.
Yeah.
Well, in Texas. And sucks to be you, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Have a great one.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All great week, brother.
We'll be back Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.